Last Monday, a new service was launched by Manx Care to help the 350 adults with ME and the 1,000-plus with long COVID. ME, or myalgic encephalomyelitis, also known as chronic fatigue syndrome, is a disabling and complex illness, and prior to the new service being launched, there was minimal support available for people living with the condition. On Perspective, we hear from people who attended this week's launch or helped in developing the new service. I should point out that I am president of ME Support, Isle of Man, and my daughter has severe ME, but I have endeavoured to remain as impartial as I can be in producing this programme. Just before the launch ceremony, I spoke to David Leiserach, who has long COVID.
Well, I had COVID in October 2021, which wasn't too much of a problem. A bit more sleeping than usual. But since then, I've had long COVID, yes. My sleep patterns have changed. I now regularly need in excess of 12 hours sleep a night, with additional sleeps during the afternoon. I've developed brain fog. I find it difficult to read, write, watch TV even. If I were of working age, I wouldn't be able to hold down a job. If I undertake any limited amount of exercise, lactic acid builds up in my muscles very quickly and I just have to stop what I'm doing. My saturated oxygen levels fluctuate from a giddy high of 95% down to sometimes as low as 90%, and my breathing becomes laboured after minimal exercise. So I'm happy with now. Well, the only way I can describe it, it's as if all your brain cells have done a runner. Simple things like you're in the middle of a sentence and you can't think of the right word. If you're reading something, you read it and you don't understand what you're reading. Even simple operations that you've always done suddenly become very hard work. Communication is a real problem, I would say. There are times when my brain is working, and there are times when it just doesn't, and I just have to be honest with people. Very easily, mid-sentence, suddenly your brain just switches off. It can be very, very difficult. But it's also the way that some days you're fine, you can do things, you can cope with things, you don't feel that you're pushing yourself, and then the next day, suddenly, wham, the brain fog comes on, the physical constraints come in, and really all you're fit for is just lying down somewhere and trying to recuperate. My hopes are that people will be helped better to cope with whether it's ME, whether it's CFS, whether it's long COVID. There is lots of information out there, but it greatly helps if you're steered in the right direction to know where to go, where to try and find information. The service is only just getting up and running now, and I hope it will be able to provide a lot of help to those people who need it.
During the launch, a short video was played in which the Isle of Man's notorious treatment 30 years ago of then ME sufferer Ian Proctor was discussed. Ian tells us his experience at that time, and then Chair of ME Support Isle of Man, Dewan Corlett, describes the journey that led to the new service.
There was a knock at the door. And it was the GP. He had two social workers with him, and that they were going to take me away to a place of safety. The female social worker told me that they would take me away because my parents would let me die.
How were you treated when you got into hospital?
They used to race down the corridor with me in the wheelchair and suddenly stopped and see if I'd react or anything. They even took me swimming and let me go under the water. They also put me on a ghost train. I think the idea of that was to scare me into moving. I was totally distraught. I was crying all the time. I am very bitter about the way I was treated. Most of the doctors didn't really want to understand what the illness was about. Didn't really care how I was treated. They just wanted me to be better instantly.
Heavy scrutiny inevitably followed both on our island and across the water in the Palace of Westminster. For decades, this spotlight failed to translate into meaningful support for local families who were left to struggle on alone. and by October 2019, former Health Minister David Ashford had promised immediate improvements and a full service by April 2020.
This has been talked about for 9 years now, and it's enough of talking about it. It's time to do it. And my challenge as Minister is to make sure that they actually start seeing change on the ground.
This deadline was missed, and the consequences would be grave.
From this evening, I must give the British people a very simple instruction. You must stay at home.
People with ME feared that the COVID outbreak in March 2020 would lead to an avalanche of ME cases. Sadly, these fears have been realised. By late summer of 2020, DHSC was still struggling to make progress, and with the island temporarily COVID-free, we took the opportunity to set out what was required, the simple steps to implement an ME service that would benefit those with ME and also those from the long COVID community. In May 2021, we resorted to an intense fortnight of advocacy. And then, finally, after more than 30 years, the tide started to turn. Regular discussions between Manx Care and ME Support IOM have continued since then, and we have worked together to co-produce a new service. There was a collaborative approach behind the scenes, and in addition, the local media generated some helpful reminders of our cause. This brings us to the present day, and our co-production efforts alongside Manx Care have culminated in the opening of a new combined ME/CFS and long COVID service. The new team is passionate and enthusiastic, and the new service is based on the latest guidance. It's important to remember that the new service will not cure patients. However, it's a huge step in the right direction and one that has been 34 years in the making.
I'm Craig Morris, Vice President of ME Support, and I'm here because my experience of ME has made me passionately believe that we need to take post-viral fatigue more seriously. For most, a virus might mean a week or two in bed feeling terrible, but for a small but significant percentage, it can be a severe and cruel illness. ME is a complex, fluctuating neurological and immune condition that affects multiple body systems and can be utterly devastating. It is characterized by severe, persistent fatigue that is not improved by rest and may be worsened by physical or mental activity. Like long COVID, it may be the result of ongoing immune system dysregulation and neuroinflammation, and it strikes people differently. It can make even simple things that you take for granted, like being able to stand up, walk, eat, talk, listen to a single song, or even brush your teeth, difficult, painful, and for some impossible. It's the independence of being able to do what you want, when you want, that I miss most. People with ME were the canaries in the coal mine and spoke up so that people with long COVID would be taken more seriously and have a better chance to get the research and support they need. So what's it like when a virus hits you harder than you thought possible? Why do we need this new service? I'd like to take a minute or two to read to you how some local people have tried to explain in their own words. This is case study 1 of 26 from 2021. The fatigue of ME is difficult to describe to someone who hasn't experienced it. I can assure you, I would rather have anything other than ME. When my husband got cancer, I was a little jealous that he had something believable and treatable, as indeed it was. This is case study 2 of 30 plus from 2015. Managing ME has meant reassessing my position as mum. My children have had to take over many of the household chores, and it's very difficult not being able to do all the things I want to as mum. Drive them to clubs, make dinner, listen to them reading, attend school concerts, etc. I've had to reassess my social life as I can't make commitments and have to intersperse social occasions with planned rest. Life has become a juggling of priorities and missed opportunities. It must be nearly 12 years ago I wrote about my experiences in the medical system for the ME Association in the hope that lessons would be learned and to share the specialist advice I received from the service in Liverpool. It's been a long, hard and often lonely road campaigning about ME and post-viral illnesses since then, but there have also been some real highs as Manx Care listened and COVID persuaded even the most cynical that there were lessons to be learned from the experiences of those with ME. It's the people I've worked with that have made the biggest difference, whether that's those running the best services in the UK, the sufferers in case studies from 2015 or 2021, those thousands who signed the Tynwald petition and stood with us in the Tynwald debate in 2021, never mind the patient groups and researchers in the UK, France, Germany, Australia and America. And as I step back to focus on my health, I'm delighted that the dynamic duo and Corlett is more than happy to and capable of driving things forward. Before handing over to the heart of the ME team, Joe and Nikki and Katie, I'd like to pay tribute to Duan. We met in 2019 and discovered we had a lot in common, as well as ME and enthusiasm for sport and hockey in particular. ME campaigning and advocacy can be a hard and lonely road, so Duan's dynamism, determination and ambition have done much to energise the push for an ME service that we can be really proud of. I'll always remember sitting nervously outside Tynwald at the start of the protest in May 21, hoping we'd get a respectable number of people to turn up, and being blown away at how many friends, colleagues and teammates came out to show their support. It's thanks to people who've stood up to be counted, like Phil and Celia, Alan and Duan, and a strong ME support committee that we're here today. So now to stop, rest, pace, and hand over to Joe and Nikki, who we've worked closely with over the last 18 months, and who I'm confident are going to transform the lives of many people over the coming months.
Healthcare professionals Joe, Nikki and Katie describe the new service.
So we're really keen, I think, in terms of developing the service, that this should be a collaborative approach from the start. So we're so thrilled to be here today with everybody who's contributed. And as you can see, it's been a range of people that have made this happen. Going forwards, we asked for a lot of information in terms of feedback. Maybe a lot of you here today attended the listening events and also filled in some of the feedback on the survey that we put out as well. So as you can see, there was a range of ways that we wanted the approach to sort of take place, that was moving from a doing to people to a doing with, and really hoping that people would feel empowered to co-design the service and contribute and talk about with us what was important really for you to have on island. And we're moving away from a predominantly sort of medical model approach to one that's a wellness model. And in the way we work, hopefully this is really holistic and encompasses all the different parts of the person and everything that we consider as part of wellness. So what it isn't, it's not DIY. We're not leaving people to get on with things themselves or do it by themselves. And it's not just information giving. And it's not us telling you what to do, because at the end of the day, you're the experts on you. We bring our respective knowledge and some guidance, but really you're the expert on yourself because you've known yourself your whole life. So we're hoping that what we can offer is supporting people to build confidence, skills and knowledge to live really well with their condition.
The model that we'll be using is the dysregulation model. So as Craig was saying, you know, it affects multiple systems and there's multiple symptoms that occur with these two conditions. What we won't be doing, it's not based on deconditioning. It's not based on a psychological issue, it's not graded exercise therapy, it's not cognitive behavioural therapy, and it's not necessarily fatigue management. So what we'll actually look at is that there's a dysregulation with all the systems within the body. It can be vary for everybody, and these are the systems that are involved with sort of regulating energy and what can go wrong in those systems. We consider all of the systems working against each other, and you have some systems that are heightened, some that aren't working as effectively, and that's where we get this dysregulation within the bodily systems.
So we're looking at using the STEP therapy programme, which is looking at the assessment and formulation, the care planning, the active stabilisation, and then building tolerance, enhancing engagement and planning progression. Not everyone will be ready to engage fully in the STEP programme on offer, and how people move through the programme will be very much dependent on their needs and requirement. It will be, you know, people could do one-to-one versus groups. You know, we'll look at all of that as we go through the programme.
And I think as we go through the programme, there's plenty of opportunity to review things and touch base and see how people are getting on. So we also want to consider how psychology might be utilised, and because I've talked to so many people who would, you know, see historically there's been this sense of almost carving nature of the joints, and either it's a psychological problem or a mental health problem or it's a physical problem, and we really want to move away from that, because as I've said to so many people, you know, in any long-term condition we would accept and recognise that there's a whole range of sort of psychological reactions to living with a long-term problem. So whether that's cancer care, or whether it was chronic pain, or living with diabetes, and ME and chronic fatigue and long COVID are no different really. So the Living Well programme that I've started, which it begins sort of after Easter actually, is another sort of avenue, as well as the programme that we're delivering as the mainstay within the service, for people who want to engage in sort of low-level psychoeducational support. And really the focus will be on, I suppose, getting the basics right around sleep and nutrition and movement and breathing right, because we understand so much more about that now. And these will be taking place at various locations across the island.
So Joe and I have worked together for a number of years within the 3 hours each that was mentioned earlier, but Joe's been an occupational therapist for over 20 years and has worked for over 15 years with fatigue impacting conditions and within the ME chronic fatigue service. I qualified 13 years ago and have spent 6 years within the service. And then Katie is a psychologist who qualified over 17 years ago. So we have a breadth of experience to bring to the service. And there's been lots of discussions about chronic fatigue and long COVID and how different they are, but also how similar they are. So we recognise that there will be similarities, but there'll also be differences with that. But we bring a huge amount of knowledge together and experience in post-viral conditions.
So what happens is it's a referral is received into the service by the GP, and that will be checked by our GP with special interest. Then you will receive a welcome pack, which just a bit of information about who we all are and what the programme is, going into detail. Then you'll be invited for initial assessment, which is up to 90 minutes. And again, these are in locations around the island. We will come to you. We'll try and make it as easy as possible so we can see people in Port Erin, in Ramsey, in Peel, and in Douglas, and virtually all house visits if required. Then there's two initial workshops, which is what is ME, fatigue, and long COVID. So we're separating the conditions at that point. And then the second workshop is about kind of like barriers for change and what we, you know, what is there that we can look at to help us get to where we want to be. And then there's a one-to-one review and care plan, which will again be with one member of the team. And then there'll be a therapy program, which is 4 stabilizing sessions, which are once a fortnight. After that, it's again a one-to-one review. And then if it's felt, then, you know, the next step is going to the increasing tolerance, which again is 4 sessions, which are once a month. And then there'll be a one-to-one review and looking at where to go kind of from there. And then discharge. But the programme can, you know, it can change as we go along.
I spoke to Ian Proctor's parents, Barbara and Robin. They describe why they formed ME Support Isle of Man.
Yes, there was myself, my husband, Jan Day and her husband, and Anne Beard and her husband. We were the founder members of the group many years ago.
And you had very strong cause to need to have a group like ME Support, didn't you?
Yes, because our son was very ill and we couldn't find out at first what was wrong with him, and eventually found out it was ME. But there was no support here on the island at all.
And indeed there was quite a lot of publicity surrounding your son's case, in that the authorities basically didn't really accept the illness, did they?
That's true, yes, and he was taken away from us and put into care because they thought we were making him ill. It was all imaginary, it was all in his head. Or it could be bullying at school or that sort of thing, which we knew it wasn't, but they didn't want to believe it at all.
Yeah. And that must have been incredibly difficult.
Oh, it was horrendous. We felt, made us feel really bad, didn't it, Rob? Made us feel as though we weren't good parents. But yeah. We knew, you know your own children, don't you? And you know if there's something wrong with them, which we did. And we were determined to find out what it was and get all the help we could.
And in terms of that help, what works, do you think, in terms of helping people who have ME?
Well, I think it's mainly it's rest and just listening to your own body. As a doctor told us, one of the for alternative medicine, that you listen to your own body. You know how you feel, you know, and only you know. Nobody else can tell you how you feel inside.
And one of the hardest things, even now, we do come across occasional people in the medical services, medical profession, who obviously don't believe that ME is a real condition. That's possibly one of the hardest aspects of all this, isn't it? Just not being believed.
Really, it is. And some people, you see, they look well, so look at them, but they're very ill inside. Whereas our son, he looked ill and lost weight, couldn't walk, dragged his legs, and he couldn't do anything. He became almost paralysed in the end with it. That's how severe he was, and lost his voice even.
And the great thing about your son's case is that actually it was one of the positives in that he's now able to live a reasonably normal life.
Oh, he is, yes. He's married, has a stepson, perfectly happy, you know, works very hard with IT and things. But he's always careful, you know. You never say never again, but you just hope that, you know, he stays fit and well, which he is now. You know, we're so proud of him.
And as a parent and a carer, it's also quite a difficult thing for you, isn't it? I mean, it's bad enough for the person who has ME, but as a parent, there's so much that you can't understand, basically because the person with ME often isn't capable of telling you how they think.
True. Yes, that's very true. I mean, you know they're ill, if you can see they're ill, but you don't know how ill they are feeling inside. And they get so confused as well, you know, just to ask them simply what would they like to eat. And you might as well be asking them a $1 million question because their brain just can't cope with it, you know.
That one took me a long time to get used to, you know, trying to get our daughter to tell us what did she want. She could tell us what she didn't want to eat, but she couldn't tell us what she did.
It's so hard, isn't it? You know, you're coming up with all these suggestions and they're just looking at you, and you can see their mind is churning, trying to work out what they want to. And then, of course, once his voice went, that was the worst part, you know.
So how long did he have ME?
It was about 3.5-4 years. Sorry. He had ME.
Ian, through about 3.5 years.
Yeah. Till he was sort of, you know, back, able to walk again and talk again.
And it's great that he is able to lead that much fuller life now. In terms of recovery, how did the recovery actually happen?
The court case, the Deemster eventually said he'd had enough of what was going on, and he immediately released Ian from being a ward of court and being held in hospital. The Deemster specified that he'd be put into the care of Dr. Davis from Aberystwyth Hospital, who we had seen, who had an outbreak of 12 children that he'd, with ME, that he'd looked after. He had to be under his main care, and with a doctor on the island, Dr. Pickering, who was at the time was a homeopathic doctor, although he had been an army surgeon and senior surgeon at Newcastle Hospital. And together they saw, sort of oversaw Ian's recovery, I would say within 6 months, they had him back at school. Although he couldn't walk and he couldn't talk, he went back to school, and within a further sort of 6 months, that he had him starting to walk again, although it was with crutches. After that, it went on. But the main thing to say how well he did was that when he went back to school, he'd been off of school for 1.5 years, I think it was, and he went straight back into the class that he would have been if he hadn't been ill, and he passed all his GCE exams and everything, you know, and that's how well they had made his recovery.
Finally then, I mean, you must be delighted to be here today at this launch. It's just so fantastic, isn't it, to have us?
It's marvellous, it is, and everybody's worked so hard in the group to get it where it is today. Yeah. And well, as long as we can get it accepted and the medical profession accept it, that's half the battle, isn't it? Isn't it? Yeah.
Celia Marshall, former chair of ME Support Isle of Man.
And Celia, you worked and battled incredibly hard for people with ME for quite some time to try and get a service off the ground. And so many times there was promises of a service, but so many times it never quite managed to happen.
Yes, I mean, we started seriously contacting the Department of Health about eight years ago, and they initially really wanted to set up a service, but unfortunately we had plan after plan after plan, and it never really got going. And we knew there were 350 people on the Isle of Man who had ME or CFS, but unfortunately a lot of the doctors even at that stage didn't even recognise it, so they would go to their doctor and not really get any support. What we did do is we introduced a half-day training for all GPs on the island, and that started to raise awareness of the condition. And then, of course, when Duren took over as chair a couple of years ago, he was able to take the whole thing much further, and he could talk to the professionals in England and to the professionals in the Isle of Man, and was able to persuade them that, yes, we did need a service, because it was in the interests of everybody that people with ME are given support so that they don't deteriorate down and get worse and worse, which was what was happening before.
And there was no doubt that we had political will. Various ministers had assured us that they wanted to see a new service, but sadly, elections tended to come along and ministers moved, and it's only really now that we're getting to the position where the service is being announced.
That's right. I mean, the politicians wanted it, and the people at the head of the department seemed to want it as well, but for some reason it didn't happen. Of course, COVID and long COVID has made a massive difference, because long COVID, after all, is a post-viral fatigue multi-systemic condition, which is basically what ME is. And so I think that has helped, because the service that's being set up is obviously for ME people and for long COVID.
And you must be delighted today that the many years that you worked to try and get this service, finally the service is being launched.
I'm absolutely overwhelmed, really, because all that time when the people didn't have any recognition, because we have the service for all the people who have got ME and who will use the service, but also the higher level of awareness of everybody will benefit everybody who's got ME, all the 350 plus the 1,000 or so who've got long COVID.
Oliver Radford is head of operations at Manx Care, and he described the partnership working between Manx Care and ME Support Isle of Man.
It's certainly the first time that we've done it so much in partnership, and, you know, to be perfectly honest, it's been a real delight to work with Duren and Craig in particular, and other colleagues from ME Support Isle of Man. Their keenness to be involved, to input into at every stage of the process, really, from the original writing of the business case, helping to organise their listening events, helping to input, provide some advice to people attending those listening events, how ME Support Isle of Man can help. And then also in the actual development of the patient pathways as well. Duan has also been a member of the project board, so the overarching group that has seen the project develop from the very inception through to, we had our last project board about a month ago, when we basically launched the service in reality. You know, today is a great day to celebrate, but actually the service has been running around a month to 6 weeks in earnest. But it's been a real joy working with those colleagues from ME Support Isle of Man, and it's certainly has been a good lesson to me as how we can really involve, you know, whatever service that we are developing, there's always going to be groups of patients that it affects, and getting their involvement and getting their input early doors is something that, you know, it makes complete sense when you say it, but it's something that we haven't really properly done. And I think this is a real exemplar case that we can use for the future.
You must be delighted then that this service is finally being launched today.
Yeah. Oh yeah, absolutely. Over the moon. You know, being involved in it for just under 2 years. But you know, having seen the various different false starts that have happened beforehand, and the impact of that on the ME patient group with who've got ME chronic fatigue syndrome, the fact that we've now launched it and it's starting to help people who've waited so long for that for support is great, and I'm really proud to see it happening.
Hi, I'm Katie Rowe, clinical psychologist. So I work as a consultant psychologist in the team. But my remit really within Manx Care is a health liaison one. So it spans quite a number of different physical health specialisms really. So the time that I'm with the ME and chronic fatigue service and long COVID is quite limited, but hopefully within that time I can sort of offer a psychological take on living with long-term problems.
I suppose many people who have had ME for a long while will be aware that it used to be that your team was the go-to place. People who had these long-term conditions that meant that they were very lethargic and in a lot of pain, and they were often sent to the mental health team. That's probably not the best place for them.
No, you're right, and it's really unfortunate that we carve nature of the joints and we sort of see it as either a mental health problem or a physical health problem, when actually all of us know that if you're living with a physical health issue like cancer or like diabetes or chronic pain or ME or chronic fatigue, is there a psychological component to that? Of course there is. You know, are there days when you feel really down or you feel overwhelmed, you feel, sort of isolated? All of those things are bound to affect you, really. So for me, what I hope that I bring to the team is a much more holistic view of how, you know, physical health difficulties affect us emotionally. And then, you know, if we're not feeling right emotionally, that affects us in our body. You know, it's a completely two-way relationship, isn't it?
And in terms of the service, how will you or your team be engaged in delivering this service?
So I suppose the mainstay of the interventions that we offer, beyond assessment, a holistic assessment where we bring all of our specialisms together, is really the group programme that we're offering, and that's all around the dysregulation model. So hopefully with that as the mainstay, we'll bring a new understanding to these conditions.
Craig Morris is Vice President of ME Support and also has ME. What was his reaction to the new service?
Ecstatic, thrilled. I think that's where a lot of my passion lies, and I guess that's the life of people with ME, really. We're kind of trapped in our own worlds in many ways and desperate for solutions, so we do the research we can. But it has been quite an enabling part of the journey to link up with those patients and researchers from around the world and see actually how much hope there is, how much we can do that really helps. I think it's a little bit hard for a GP. People come to them and they don't necessarily know how to help, but actually there's a lot you can do to help people with ME and long COVID. It's been really nice to get some traction already and get some messages from France and Germany and, you know, Australia and America to people that care about what's happening here. And some have been involved in the research and planning the service and to see the difference that they always knew it could make for people. But to see that actually happening, I think, was massive. And to see those medical professionals on Monday talking to people about what they can do, that was a really special feeling. That's always been at the front of our campaign, to get in early intervention with a prompt diagnosis so you can get that specialist advice, because if you don't, the prognosis is bleak. If it takes too long, then I think your chances, as a French study said a couple of weeks ago, it's about 8% by the time you're severe with ME. And
that's basically 8% chance of a full recovery.
Yeah. Maybe not even entirely full recovery, but enough to say live independently.
Head of Communications for the UK ME Association, Russell Fleming, describes the collaboration with UK ME experts, which helped develop the service.
Our medical advisor, Dr. Charles Shepherd, who's probably the most recognised expert in the UK on ME-CFS, has been helping them over those years. And they've also had some excellent help from specialist clinicians who work for the NHS in the UK. Sue Pemberton from the Yorkshire Fatigue Clinic, Carol Wilson from the Cornwall Specialist Service, Dr. Vicky McKeever, who works with the British Association of Clinicians in ME-CFS, to name but a few. So it's been a real collaborative effort. It still took a number of years, more years than I think patients really wanted to wait. But, you know, we're here now, and it's been a really momentous week, I think, for the Isle of Man. For people with illnesses like ME-CFS and long COVID, where there aren't any effective drug treatments, for example, they really need one-to-one help learning how to cope with the condition, you know, because it can really devastate their lives. I mean, we're talking about people who are quite often gainfully employed, very fit and active, who contract a virus, and they just don't recover. And so all of a sudden their life's turned upside down, and not having, you know, dedicated specialist support in place can leave a person, you know, wandering in the wilderness, except they can't wander because they often can't walk and they're confined to bed. So sort of having that access available, especially locally, and the new service in the Isle of Man will deliver clinics, I understand, around the island, which makes it even more accessible, is fantastic. We're in competition with hundreds, if not thousands, of other diseases. So, you know, the job of the NHS and the health services on the island isn't easy. I mean, we all acknowledge that. They've got to try and find some sort of balance to provide, you know, decent care and support to people with multiple conditions who all need help. So it's not an easy process. And I think in part that's why it's taken so long to, you know, get this funding, because it isn't a bottomless pit, is it, with funding. Before the pandemic, plans were already laid for a specialist service to be created. And then the emergence of long COVID, in the UK, for example, ME-CFS is believed to affect about 265,000 people, children and adults. Along comes the pandemic, and you're getting a similar proportion of people being unable to recover from the virus, but it's affecting 1.8 million adults and children. So the numbers are huge. In England, 20 years ago, NHS England provided relatively large at the time pot of money to establish a network of specialist services for ME-CFS. There hasn't been any central funding since, so the network has been in decline. But, you know, we're hopeful that in those areas where there are no services, commissioners will in particular look at the Isle of Man and think, you know, maybe it's more economic and more sense, makes more sense if we looked at combining a service, so we have a long COVID and ME service like you do, rather than try and tackle these very similar conditions separately. So I do think that the Isle of Man will be examined and the process of development examined. And, you know, it is a model for how patients, healthcare professionals and healthcare commissioners can all work together to develop a service that will be of benefit for the local community. We are in awe of what Dewan and Craig and you know, the Isle of Man support have been able to achieve. And they went out, they got the specialists, they approached them, they asked for help. Most of the help, if not all of it, was given freely. So, you know, I tip my hat to the clinicians here in the UK who were willing to get involved. And it's been a brilliant week, you know, really. Well, I'm delighted to see the photos and hear the stories that you've been carrying on Manx Radio about, you know, how patients have reacted to the new service.
Member for Health Michelle Haywood, MHK, attended the launch.
I had COVID back in TT week last year, missed TT week entirely pretty much, but then after that suffered disturbed sleep patterns, brain fog, really struggled to actually articulate myself, which is not necessarily a good job for a politician, is it? And thankfully my symptoms resolved after about 4 or 5 months, apart from I'm left with lasting vertigo now, which is fine. Just feels like I've had a couple of gins every single minute of the day. I found myself really struggling for words, and I think the nearest I could explain it before that was, you know, if you're a parent and you have more than one child, there are times where you can't remember which particular child you're about to talk to because your brain stores those names all in the same place. But I think once you've got brain fog on there, there are lots of things that seem to be stored in the same place. I couldn't find the right one I needed, couldn't find the right words, couldn't find the right expressions at all. And I found it really isolating because you suddenly can't express yourself in the way you've been used to.
And the only thing that perhaps hasn't yet been delivered is the children's service for ME. Obviously, budgets remain tight across government. Do you think there's any prospect that a children's service will be introduced in the not too distant future?
The business case is being worked on now. There is a lot of political pressure for this. I think we recognise that actually for children, especially as you miss so much education if you're suffering, that actually that has an almost a bigger lifelong impact. And it almost becomes even more important that we act early and we help resolve that and we try and recover some of those life chances.
Driving force behind the new service, Dewan Cullett describes his feelings.
There was a real sense in the room on Monday how big an occasion it was for people who have been invested in a cause for so many years and in some cases decades. You know, some people have dedicated large amounts of their life to something. And there was an atmosphere in the room on Monday. And I think it's still sinking in. You know, it's something that I've personally been working at really intensely for 2 years and a little bit longer, but really intensely for the last 2 years. And all of a sudden, you know, we've got hopefully a really good service up and running, which will make a big difference to people's lives. Yeah, it's really fantastic to just be soaking it in at the moment and hopeful that it's the start of something, you know, really important. I think the history of these conditions is really relevant when you talk about the impact of a story like this. You know, a condition which faced stigma, disbelief, people with a life-changing disability and not being believed. And there's a lot of horror stories, there's a lot of frustration and a lot of failure to get you know, proper support and healthcare provision in place internationally. It's not something that's unique to the Isle of Man. Or the British Isles. This is a you know, a global problem, providing healthcare for ME/CFS and more recently long COVID. When we've shared this good news this week, it's been picked up, you know, as a ray of hope. You know, I've had messages from Italy, Holland, lots from the UK, and the impact it's really blown me away, the amount of people who have no connection to the Isle of Man, or you know, had no knowledge of what was going on here until this week. And it's you know, I'm not a user of Twitter, but we've got some traction on Twitter this week. You know, from far afield, there's a lot of progress that could be made scientifically with better investment and research that would unlock better options and greater clarity amongst the medical profession and tap into their sincere desire to help. You know, these are generally people who got into the jobs that they're in to help people, and I think if there was more investment in research, then that would go a long way to helping in that respect. But the difficulty of seeing the condition, and if you see somebody for half an hour or even a couple of days, you know, or you see somebody intermittently with a condition, and it's difficult to really see what's going on with the person and what symptoms they're experiencing. I think a lot of family members of people with these conditions struggle to get their head around what the person's going through and how it's affecting their body and how that translates in terms of altered behavior patterns and altered you know, all sorts of, you know, interactions with friends and family are changed because of the condition, but it's not always obvious that the condition is the cause of the change. So it's a really complicated thing to deal with. And the more we talk about the condition and how it affects people and the underlying mechanisms, including the, you know, the biology, then it helps people understand, and it breaks down those sort of challenging barriers. Yeah, I feel like I'm taking more glory than I deserve. I'm the current chair of a charity, and have been in post for less than a year now. You know, I really got involved 2 years ago, you know, as a volunteer and then a trustee, and I'm now chair. But you know, there's been a fantastic group of volunteers and people running ME Support IOM for 35 years now, founded by you know, Barbara and Robin Proctor after their horrendous experience. And it was great to see so many former committee members in attendance on Monday, and to see the reaction. You know, there was a lot of emotion and a lot of, you know, evidencing something that they thought may never happen. I think it was great to allow those people who invested in it for so long to see it get to the finishing line. And there were a lot of people who weren't able to attend on Monday, who desperately wanted to, and are a big part of this journey and story. And the nature of their condition is that they can't get to a public event. You know, a lot of people are still housebound by the condition. You know, my health is slowly improving, but it was really misleading to judge my health on how I was acting on that Monday afternoon. It was such a huge investment of energy. You know, I rested all for 3 or 4 days really in the run up as much as I could, and you know, I rested in the morning and I rested as soon as I got home, and Craig as well, who participated. I think you could see that, you know, the drain it was for him to take part, and there's, you know, there's people making a big effort just to be there and be part of it. Yeah, those emotions are often just below the surface about how the condition affects you and how it can limit you, and you go, you steel yourself in your normal routine, and then something happens and it brings it back to the surface of what a big impact it has on your life.
And finally, Craig Morris again.
A lot of people think ME and long COVID is about just being tired, but actually that post-exertional malaise, that getting really exhausted from the smallest amount of physical or mental effort is really one of the defining characteristics. And that, and some of the neurological complications, the sort of brain fog, we might call it. I think if we were able to be a little bit more aware about that, and for GPs to know a little bit more about that, it would really help people be kinder to themselves when they're having to do less at work or in the house or with their families. And it's just that little bit of doing less early on that means that you can bounce, stabilize and bounce back later is really what I'd like, so that fewer people end up with the severe symptoms. But it's hard. You want to do as much as you can. You want to perform at work. You want to be doing those things with your partner and your children and for yourself. But that could be a terrible mistake to make in the short term. It's a different life in the Shadowlands with much smaller horizons, and I think you have to adapt and survive and learn to enjoy those little things you can find and enjoy in those precious few minutes where you can interact with people and do little things.
I'm Phil Gorn, Goromayo, thanks for listening.